Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. Unless, of course, this is your first time here, then welcome. Make sure to head over to the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. Get onto that email list. It's where everyone's hanging out. And, you know, go around, see what's there. There's lots there to help you on the blog. There's also the quiz you can find at hacktheentrepreneur.com/quiz, which apparently over 1,000 people have now taken in the last few weeks. And it'll tell you just what kind of entrepreneur you are. But most of you have been here before, and I appreciate you being here. I also appreciate your time, and I don't want to waste any of it. So let's get straight into it, shall we? My guest today started his first quote-unquote real business almost 15 years ago at the age of 21 when he was just equipped with a stack of homemade flyers and his mom's SUV. This company is Junk Luggers, a junk removal and dumpster rental company with a twist. It's that it contributes to the communities they serve and the environment by donating, recycling, and supporting local causes. What started as a side hustle in 2004 has now grown from a one-person show to an Inc. 5000 company serving 60 markets in 13 states. Since their inception, Junk Luggers has also become an emerging franchise brand with a quickly growing number of franchise partners opening around the country. Now, let's hack Josh Cohen. I need to admit something to you. I'm a little bit of a book nerd. I read at least 50 books a year, and that's just, and not even all fiction, some nonfiction, a lot of nonfiction. And I grew up and I spent over a decade just devouring every business book I could. But sometimes I run out of time, and sometimes I wish that a book could just be condensed because there's an excellent point to be made, and then there's a whole bunch of other stuff added around it. So if you're anything like me, you're going to love this new app. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes. Seriously, 15 minutes. How many times in your life have you been told that you should read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People? I've been told I don't know how many times for the past 20 years, and I had never done it. And then I got Blinkist. It's actually quite an amazing book. You should read it, or you should get it on Blinkist. Here's the thing. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you because you are my audience. Go to Blinkist.com/hack, and for 7 days, you'll get a free trial. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist.com/hack. You'll get a 7-day free trial. Once again, that's Blinkist.com/hack. All right. Let's get into the conversation. Every company battles challenges as they grow. Updating manual processes, replacing inefficient systems. But as you scale, you'll need software that can handle that growth. I want to introduce you to NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform. Why, you may ask? Because with NetSuite, you can save time, you can save money, and you can save unneeded headaches by managing your sales, your finance, and your accounting, orders, and HR instantly, right from your desk or even your phone. Here's the thing. NetSuite has helped thousands of the fastest growing companies to scale and grow their companies. And in this process, they've gained some key insights, and they want to share them with you. You can get NetSuite's guide, Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth, when you go to netsuite.com/hack now. Download their free Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth guide today at netsuite.com/hack. Once again, that's netsuite.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, Josh. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Pleasure is all mine. Pleasure is all mine. I'm glad we are getting a chance to sit down and do this in the spring rush season for you and Junk Luggers, but we're going to make it worth it for everyone. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Here we go.
Josh, let's start here. As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Good question. I would say that probably the biggest thing I do is try not to do everything myself. I know it's a really tempting thing for entrepreneurs, but I've certainly found that I have strengths and weaknesses. And one of my weaknesses is when I'm too overwhelmed, trying to do too much, I don't do anything well. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people can relate to that. So what I've really tried to do since early on is to surround myself with good people who could take some of the things off my plate that I either don't enjoy or don't have time to do or don't do very well. And certainly leveraging other people is a key ingredient to growing a company beyond, you know, just a startup phase or a few people.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. This is a hard one, I think, for a lot of people to, I think, come to terms with, or at least initially let go of those reins.
Right.
It's been a while now. It's been almost 15 years since you started Junk Luggers. But can you think back to what the first job or the first person you hired to get things off your plate was?
Yeah. I mean, for me, being in a junk removal company, it was definitely hiring people to be on trucks. I knew that, you know, if I wanted to build the company and I had a lot of ideas from the beginning on how to do that, I simply wouldn't be able to if I was, you know, stuck hauling junk out of somebody's home. So early on, I created some processes and procedures so that things would remain consistent when I was off the truck, and just quickly hired, well, not that quickly, but within the first year, I hired two people to work on the trucks. And just a funny side note story, on that very first job, I remember I was at a community center. So, and I had the guys meet me there with the truck. I drove it over, said, all right, guys, meet me here. We don't have an office yet. We'll meet in this parking lot. Today's day one, and I'm not going to be on the truck today. It's a big day. And I remember them driving off and maybe had a little tear in my eye because I knew that this was the start of something bigger. And I got a call an hour later. Hey, Josh, we just backed into somebody's garage door. You're going to need to come down and take a look at this. But I remember thinking, hey, these things are going to happen, even though, you know, we really didn't even have any money to pay for it. We figured it out, and the guys continued on for the rest of the day, no more accidents. And I knew that things were going to happen from time to time, even if I was on the truck. But if I wanted to continue to reach my goal and scale, I was just going to have to accept that everything can't be perfect.
Right, exactly. And so this goal in scaling, did you sit down and actually have a written down goal, like your processes, or
no?
Was it just sort of wanted to grow?
I'm actually infamous for not writing down my goals, or at least for a long time, until I started working with business coaches who really pushed me and I saw the reason behind it. But no, it was really just that first year on the truck, I was constantly, you know, thinking and even hearing from our customers, this is the kind of service that could work in so many other places, not just in my small hometown, the area where I grew up. And so that really got me thinking about, if I can do it here, why not many other places? And this was even before I knew about some of the competitors who had been building, one in particular who started in Canada and had been building and franchising it. And when I did find out about them a few years later, it only validated what I was thinking and the approach.
Interesting. So we are going to talk about those Canadians. He was on the show and he apparently started when you were just 7 years old. That was Got Junk.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting because, like, they've gone worldwide. And so I've heard of them. And as a Canadian, obviously, they got their start around where I am. And so we knew about them, I guess, my whole life mostly. But I was wondering, like, if you see something like that, like were you in another city and you saw it, but you hadn't even seen that this existed as a business? You're just like, garbage removal is a huge industry.
Yeah. I mean, when I started in 2004, internet marketing and even just like kind of browsing websites was really just beginning. And so just the awareness, the ability to look up companies, understand what they're doing or just thinking about doing that wasn't so big. When we advertised back then, it was all direct mail, for instance. So I didn't find out about them actually until I had called one of my customers. He had been using me and I was slowly chipping away at a job, but not fast enough for her. And she said, listen, you know, I really like you guys, but I have to get this done today. I've called this other company, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, to get it done. And I said, 1-800-GOT-WHAT? Who are these guys? Little did I know they were building an empire across the world. So that was my first intro to them.
And you didn't go home that night and were like, oh my God. You were like, it's validation. That's what it is.
That's how I saw it. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I guess is true. I mean, it's a massive industry. Not one company can ever possibly take it over. But I know that a lot of people would actually use that to not even start. Luckily, you had blindly started anyways and then didn't even take it to heart at that point anyways. It was just like, there we go. It works.
Yeah, probably a little bit of young and foolishness, but I'm sure glad I had that in me, because if I got nervous or if it scared me, then who knows, we wouldn't be here today.
Right. And had you at this point already sort of like spread out to other markets or cities or states?
No, I hadn't. We're still using, I think, Old Rusty was our first truck that we called it. Old 87 Ford F-350 with like this very crickety body in the back. And you would hear it coming from a mile away. So no, we were just getting started at that point.
Okay. So this is, I like this. And so this would not only validate the idea of locally working, but also the fact that this company is now like franchising across Canada and now across the States. So is this sort of a direction, like were they sort of a blueprint that you could follow at that point? Or did you just ignore them more and just keep going your own way?
No, I'm not foolish. I mean, if somebody has a formula that works, I'm not just going to ignore it to try to be original. So certainly I learned a lot from Brian and his company. I think he's an amazing entrepreneur. We'll talk about, I'm sure, on this podcast, how, you know, we've differentiated ourselves from them. But certainly I've learned things along the way from them and other competitors about what's working and what isn't. But in terms of franchising in general, though, I guess that was a model that I know they had used. That was something that many of my customers who had mentioned this could work elsewhere had suggested. And I was really just a kid and I was 21 when I started. So I didn't really even understand what franchising was about. But as my customers started to talk about it, and one in particular had franchise experience, I started to really learn, hey, this is a good potential way to grow the company and to scale.
Was Junk Luggage your first business?
It was my first real business, you know. Like I think a lot of entrepreneurs, I did things to make extra cash when I was younger, but it was my first job and my first business.
And you mentioned that first year when you were driving yourself, creating processes. Were these formal written processes that you just kept iterating?
They were. We started with, like, I remember just with a pencil and paper writing down customer name, description of the job, location of the job, special instructions for picking things up. And then we would have things about what happened after the job was complete. Again, written on paper. I used a 3-ring binder and I would file everything when it came back at the end of the day. So things like, what was the revenue for the job? What were disposal fees? What items were donated? What items were recycled? Who were the people who were on the job? Any incidents that came up? Notes about the customer. So these were all just the start of processes that I was building that we eventually turned into, you know, software or things that we put into our software program and have really evolved from there.
This is year one though, Josh. And there's small businesses and companies out there that are going for 10 and 20 years and don't have written processes.
One of the turning points for me, and I know this is a pretty popular book amongst entrepreneurs, is when I read E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. I actually know it was big for Brian. And that really opened my mind to, if we're going to scale, I got to work on the business and not in it. And I need to build processes. So I wanted to make sure that when I set that truck out for the first time, I was collecting the information to keep things consistent, to make sure the guys knew what was important, what needed to be reported, and so I could hold them accountable.
Right, exactly. So just so everybody knows out there listening, Brian, who Josh keeps alluding to, is Brian Scudamore from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He was on this show a couple of years ago. And then E-Myth Revisited, Michael Gerber, he was on the show sometime last year, I believe. And that was a wacky episode. That was a lot of fun.
I bet it was.
We went places I wasn't expecting us to go, and he refused to let me ask any questions I had planned. So it was a lot of fun, we'll say. In this, so growing from this is your first real company, you start it and you just start doing it yourself. You're creating processes. Somewhere from there till here, with the growth that you've had, you said that you started working with business coaches. I would love to know, like, what, when you started this and what impact you think that's had on your company.
Yeah, good question. I've actually worked with a number of different coaches. I've found there is just so much knowledge out there. And especially starting as a young guy without any experience, I wanted to learn as much as I could. I wanted to soak it up like a sponge. So in addition to just reading business books all the time, I needed someone to talk to who not only could coach me and has been there and done that, but I think for just mental sanity reasons, because when you start a company, I found at least that it can be pretty lonely. I haven't had a partner. And so you can't necessarily talk about everything you want to talk about with your staff or even family and friends who just may not get it. So I found that the different periods I've had with business coaches have been extremely enlightening and empowering and have been some of the biggest turning points for me in terms of taking the business to the next level and really just, I guess, evolving my mindset. Because as the leader, if I'm not evolving and I'm not bringing on new skills and leading my company well, then the company follows suit.
Right. And would you say that you are coachable?
Yeah, I'm very coachable. I think the biggest complaint my business coaches would have was that I was so coachable. I'd take things in, I'd learn as much as I could, and then I'd fire them because I had learned as much as they could give me, and I wanted to save the money.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Do you use business coaches at this point?
I go in and out. At this point, our current chief operating officer was my last former business coach.
Wow.
So I get to work with him every day, which is really exciting. And also I don't have like a specific business coach right now, but I will tell you that I just joined this group or this school called the School of Entrepreneurship, led by this just amazing entrepreneur named Larry Janeski. And he's put together an entire online video platform with material to fill out that really coaches, especially people in service and contractor businesses, all the different things they need to be thinking about, whether it comes to evolving your leadership skills or getting more specific sales tactics, sales training, marketing, operations, finance, but really geared towards the entrepreneur, the owner, so they can get a good grasp on their business and also the things that they need to do to coach other people within the company. And one of the things I really love about this and feel strongly about it is that I need to continue to improve myself and evolve myself as a leader, but I also need to lead the people that I'm leading and help them to evolve. That I've really seen, and I'm sure many entrepreneurs will attest to this, is what has built a strong company and which has, I guess, motivated people to want to be a part of the company, want to contribute and want to grow themselves as well as the company and to meet our initiatives.
Larry Janeski. So when you told me that you were in Connecticut, Josh, that's the first name that came to my mind was Larry Janeski.
Yeah, really?
Basement Systems. My father's actually one of the Basement Systems people up in Canada. And so I got introduced to him like, I want to say 10 years ago or something, and his book is on my shelf. But School of Entrepreneurship, I'll find a link to that for everyone so you can track it down, or you can just type into your search engine, Google Larry Janeski, and one day he'll be on the show too. I just know it. In passing,
there you go.
Been through this, Josh. You mentioned sort of like the primitive nature of online marketing when you started. So it was mostly all direct marketing to get going. How in that first year, let's go right back to the very beginning, how did you get, say, your first 10 clients?
Yeah, good question. Door to door. I printed up flyers for my parents' computer. It's a 21-year-old college student wants to help you haul away your unwanted junk and separate things for donations and recycling. The rest will go to the dump. and ready to get to work. So something like that. And it had one of those like really cheesy old school Microsoft Word icons on the top of it with two guys on top of a truck, which we've actually evolved into our own logo and made it more modern. But yeah, I printed up that flyer. I literally printed up 100 flyers and was going door to door in my neighborhood, handing them out. And that's how it started. I got my first job. It was an elderly woman. Her husband had just passed away, and she needed to clear out a lifetime's worth of memories in order to move on and move to her next place. And it was really that first job that made me fall in love with the business, because I realized there is so much more to this than just hauling junk. And that's, you know, been a big part of how we've grown our companies, around showing care for people's items and making sure things aren't just thrown in the trash that really have sentimental value to people when they're still perfectly good reusable life for them. So I know I'm answering a couple of questions there, but it was very grassroots, door to door. Finally, I realized I could be more efficient by going mailbox to mailbox. So I literally, my routine was, I would go 100 houses a day. I would put them in the mailbox, and I knew that I would get at least one or two jobs from each of those. So I had this formula down of how many ads I need to get out there in order to keep growing the business. And then a funny side note story is I got a nice knock on the door one day. It's not legal to apparently stuff people's mailboxes without putting a stamp on the envelope. It's a federal offense. So I created a new routine where I just took scotch tape and taped it to the mailboxes, and that seemed to work out right.
Wow, that's a legal loophole. So I love this. You had a formula. It was 100 houses. If you went to 100 houses and did the jobs you had to do that day, you would continually have jobs tomorrow and the next day.
Right. And in this business, and probably many businesses, we were, as we added new customers, it only grew our database. And a lot of our customers refer us to other people and then use us again and again. So it was a winning formula.
So now, almost 15 years later, Josh, what would you say is your number one sort of customer acquisition channel at this point?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of new customers?
Yeah, especially if you're entering a new market.
Right. So I think, being in the franchise business, a lot of franchisees, they're looking for that magic bullet. I mean, I can tell you very clearly, more of our business comes from people finding us online than anywhere else. But what I've also come to really appreciate, And we've hired just a really talented CMO who came from Edible Arrangements. And one of the things that she's really impressed upon me is how important it is to have an integrated marketing approach, not relying on one different or two different mediums to drive business, because of how important it is that they all work together. And I'm sure many people have heard that people need to see you X number of times before they pick up the phone or they visit your website. I've heard between 7 and 12 or something like that. So we're really trying to get our brand out there as much as we can in as many different mediums as we can, so that rising tide raises all ships.
So by integrated marketing approach, you mean like that, like across multiple channels rather than just focusing in one place?
Right. So a combination of social media and direct mail and Valpax, and we adopt highway signs. We have bright green, neon green dump trucks that drive around that are really in people's faces. Email marketing campaigns. There's a number of different ways a number of different things that make up a good marketing approach for us. I'm sure for many companies.
Right. And as you said, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the number one sort of way people find you for the first time is through search or online in that sense.
Yeah. And we think so, but it's also tricky, right? Because people can hear about your brand, and then they will go online and visit your website, or they'll call into our sales center and we'll ask them, how did you hear about us? Oh, we found about you online. That's not necessarily always the case, especially when we dig deeper, but it seems to be the most top of mind way that people, you know, remember hearing about us.
Right. Do you do that thing where you only park your trucks other places at night?
We do and we don't.
That's a good thing.
It is. And I learned that from them, actually. And it's very smart. So we typically will do that up until a location scales to a certain point. And then we found it actually is more efficient, and it does not affect sales by park them all in one location at the end of the day. That's a yes and no to that question.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that was something I had noticed around, but I didn't know that it was such a focused thing. When Brian was on the show, it was like, trucks are not allowed to be parked on our own property. And actually, we don't even buy our own property, so they could do it. And it's just...
Yeah, and they've backed away from that also at this point, but definitely key for starting up a location.
Right, right. Fair enough, fair enough. So let's move on to projects, if we can. You mentioned throughout here, and projects is a loose term, Josh, but you mentioned at one point how it's such a key that you take care of people's items as you're removing them for them, and how you've sort of kept that going since it was just you collecting the junk even. But a number of years ago now, you started up another company, which is Remix Market. And this is fascinating because I'll let you share what Audacious' goal is for it. But I would love to know, just you as with a growing company and looking to probably scale further across the country, how do you decide when a project like Remix Market is worth not only yours, but your team's time, energy, and resources?
That is a great question. So for us, starting up Remix Market was really, initially at least, and still, was less about the financial gain and more about helping the company to achieve our mission and our big, hairy, audacious goal, like you were just, you know, mentioning there. And our big, hairy, audacious goal is by 2025, we want to keep 100% of the items that we haul away out of landfills, at least in our home location here in Connecticut. And then from there, we'll continue to promote, see to our franchise partners, this is possible. Here's how we're doing it, and here's how you can do it. So Remix Market has been a key ingredient in all of that, because what it's allowed us to do is to take a little bit more control over what happens to stuff we haul away. And I think one of the things that we kept running up against when we were trying to donate was that donation centers were full. They were closed. They were too picky with the items that we wanted to deliver to them. And we get a lot of furniture, especially. So we opened up our own store. We partnered with a local charity around here, and we now collect, we refurbish, we restore, and resell back into the community many of the items that may have otherwise ended up in a landfill.
I love it. And obviously there's very, very apparent and obvious environmental reasons for this goal. Is it also this goal, does it get integrated into like your marketing towards new customers?
You know, we're still figuring out that approach, to be honest with you. Right now, we're marketing to two separate but similar customer bases, but it takes a big operation just to do this. It's not a financial play as much as it is a play based on, like I mentioned earlier, helping by donating, recycling, upcycling, and supporting local charities. And that's exactly what this is all about for us.
I see how that could be, yeah, something would have to be clarified with the audience. All right. Well, Josh, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could, please.
Sure.
So after interviewing almost 500 people now, Josh, I've come to this conclusion that there seems to be this gap that we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, meaning that no matter what we accomplish personally or business-wise, we never seem to see ourselves fully as successful, meaning that whatever goal you set, no matter if it's revenue or if it's expansion across the country, you and I both know, Josh, that seconds before you hit that goal, you're going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. And I agree, we need those goals. We absolutely do. But rather than for the next few minutes, rather than looking forward like we always do, I would love it if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you. The past 15 years, we've heard a lot about it, but I'm sure we haven't heard nearly all the ups or downs, highs or lows. So could you just tell me, this past journey that you've been on for 15 years, can you tell me just how it feels until today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's really interesting that you point that out, because it's totally, I'm definitely another victim of that entrepreneurial journey where it's just looking forward. But, you know, I think it's been a really amazing journey, like a roller coaster. Ton of ups and a ton of downs. I think that when I look back and I think about all the people who have been with the company, who have come and gone, who've contributed in different ways, who've gotten a chance to know all the customers that we've been able to service, and just all of the things that we used to do and we continue to tweak and continue to improve. It's been amazing. And I can tell you that without the support of my wife and my family, it would have been so much more challenging, because there are just so many days where you go home and you feel like life is kicking me in the butt, and how are we going to make it to the next week? How am I going to accomplish something or overcome a challenge? But it's just like this giant, I guess, project or game. And it's, to me, has always been about getting to the next level and making things better and better for our team members and also for our customers. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I think it's probably taken a few years off of my life, but entrepreneurship, what they say, is doing things earlier or now, so that later they can have freedom and fun and do whatever you want and flexibility. But I really, and again, going back to what I've been learning through the School of Entrepreneurship, one of the things they really try to impress upon you is to enjoy the ride, because it's so easy not to, and so easy to get caught up in everything. And so I think you make a good point. It's important to take a step back and look at what we built here. And we started literally out of my parents' house. Our first office was a beach house that I knew I could pay for the rent if I parked my bright green truck in the driveway, because it's a busy street. And then from there, hunted down a landlord who had an abandoned warehouse, who rented me his dilapidated garage for $700. To go from there to today, where we occupy an entire building, we have a large store, we have locations around the country, and we have a lot of really happy franchise partners who are growing their businesses and creating wealth and providing for their family and their team members. I think we have over 200 people in the company now. It sure is exciting. And yes, I am excited to keep going with it, and I see a ton of potential for us. But I'm really glad that I've had this opportunity and that we can affect so many people.
Great answer. Great answer. So Josh, we've talked all about your business throughout the conversation. Can you now specifically tell the listeners who you are, what you do, and where they can find you online?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Josh Cohen. I am the founder and CEO of a company called The Junk Luggers and Remix Market. You can find me online by typing in Junk Luggers on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, Josh Cohen, Junk Luggers, and look forward to hearing from as many people as I could.
Awesome. And if anybody, I guess, needs junk collected within your 60 markets, they can track you down, junkluggers.com, and maybe even if they want to start up a franchise. I'm sure all the information is on the website, right?
It is.
Nice. Yep. Nice. All right, Josh, once again, man, thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for sharing so openly with us. We really, truly do appreciate it. And just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's awesome to watch.
I appreciate it. Thank you. This has been fun.
That was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed that conversation, and I hope you did too. And we've reached the point now in the show where we need to go back through the conversation, and we need to pick out all of those things that sort of stood out to us from what Josh said. And then we have to do the difficult part of just choosing one of them. I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I found that the different periods I've had with business coaches have been extremely enlightening and empowering, and have been some of the biggest turning points for me in terms of taking the business to the next level and really just, I guess, evolving my mindset. Because as the leader, if I'm not evolving and I'm not bringing on new skills and leading my company well, then the company follows suit.
And that's the hack. Josh, Josh, Josh. I love this. And I love this because I've pushed hard for you to find co-founders, find partners to work with, because having that person to bounce ideas off of is so invaluable. Having that person who has a different skill set than you is so invaluable. But it's not necessary. But as Josh says, and I love this for And not just for people who want to go solo and start their own company and not have someone they work with, but Josh found that he didn't have that person to bounce ideas off of. He didn't have that person to push him in other ways. And like he says, previous to this was you can only talk to employees don't want to hear it, or you don't want your employees to hear it, and your spouse or your partner doesn't want to hear that. So having business coaches is somebody who's been there or else can at least be your sounding board for your ideas and can kind of set you straight and let you work through these problems. But then he also goes on to say how it pushes you to grow. It pushes your mindset. It pushes you to grow as a human, which then pushes you to grow as an entrepreneur, which then pushes your company to follow suit. So here it is, your call to action from myself and from Josh without him even knowing it. But if you are at a place in your business or in your growth where you feel stuck, where you feel stagnant, and you don't have a co-founder beside you, reach out, find a business coach, find a mentor who you can use to grow. It's essential. It really, really is. There's people who have been where you are and who have been or are where you want to be. Find those people. Josh, thank you so very, very much. All right, we did it. Another episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Wherever you're listening to this right now, it's probably on your phone, but maybe you're on Stitcher, maybe you're on Spotify, maybe you're on iTunes. If you could stop for like a minute and a half right now and leave a review or even just a rating, it does help the show so much and it would mean a lot to me. It really would. And it only takes a couple of minutes. And I know you've heard this a million times from a million podcasters, but it does help a lot. And it really just doesn't take that much effort on our parts as listeners. And so, yeah. You should do that, and I would appreciate it. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. Make sure to head over there. There's a ton over there for you. Get onto that email list. Read that blog. And with that, it's been fun. Until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.